Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There's an amazing story out of Kabul, Afghanistan. We reported on the story when the crime occurred, but now there has been a trial and a conviction in the trial. We still have Glenn with us, and I look forward to his comments on this. The dateline is Kabul, Afghanistan. The mullah, this would be an Islamic cleric, a senior Islamic cleric, as a matter of fact. He raped savagely, not just raped. I mean, he absolutely tore this little girl apart, literally. A 10-year-old girl inside of his mosque. Well, he was sentenced to 20 years in prison. It's a trial that, you know, has been watched by the world, and so the judge in this case, who will probably be killed, sentenced him to 20 years in prison. You know, he'll probably serve a year in prison and then be released. But he was sentenced to 20 years in prison for savagely raping a 10-year-old girl in his mosque. Now, the thing that makes this story interesting is that he used Sharia law as his defense. And according to Sharia law, he can't be judged guilty. Because no matter what investigation is done of the girl is the guilty party. No matter what she says, no matter how badly she was torn to ribbons, torn to pieces by this, the girl is guilty. She would be flogged and then killed. Not the Islamic imam, the mullah. Anyway, this particular judge, who I don't expect to live very long, rejected Sharia law as a defense. And he said, no, you can't claim that she seduced you. She was 10 years old. You can't claim that she was one of your wives. She's 10 years old. You can't claim that this was consensual sex. You almost killed her. And so his Islamic defense was thrown out of court. Now, what's interesting, too, is that when the girl was nearly killed, I mean, from he was so savage that he literally ripped her insides apart. And it really gets to the mentality of Islamic sex. It's why women and little girls in Islam, some 200 million of them, have their genitals mutilated by their mothers, because a girl is not supposed to enjoy sex. Sex is all about a man's conquest, a man's right over women. It's one of the things that really bothers me by these human rights advocates and women's advocates, like all the people that came out and spoke against the tweet by the PGA professional, and who are unwilling to say diddly squat about Islam. But, in Islam, sex is all about conquest. If you look at the Islamic paradise where there are 70 perpetual virgins, it's all about conquest. It's not about love, it's conquest. It's the rights of men to do whatever they wish to against women. Now, this girl, when she was beaten to the point where she literally died from this, the family wanted to kill her. As a matter of fact, it took the family committing to writing and moving the family to a different community where the family pledged that they wouldn't kill their daughter, that their intent was to kill their daughter over the shame that she had brought to them by having the Islamic mullah rape her at 10 years old in his mosque. Stunning. During the trial, the father never once looked at his daughter, never once spoke to his daughter, never once spoke on behalf of his daughter. As a matter of fact, when the trial was over and the verdict was read, the father walked out of the court without touching his daughter, without reaching out to his daughter, without consoling his daughter, and his daughter had to walk head down 20 feet behind him. And all of the human rights organizations in Afghanistan are all saying the same thing. It's just a matter of time and they will kill her. The mullah, based on Sharia law, said that, you know, You have no right to prosecute me. Her testimony is worthless. My testimony stands. And the judge says, if I were to impose Sharia law in this case, then I would have to take this girl that you brutalized at 10 years old, who could not have seduced you at 10 years old, and I would have to lash her 100 times and then kill her. Not going to do that. So there you are. That's quite a story taking place in Afghanistan. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, may Yahweh have mercy on the judge.
Yeah, you know, because that judge is going to be hunted down and killed. As a matter of fact, they're already talking about breaking the mullah out of prison, and the family is already discussing the idea of killing their daughter.
It would be nice to see. First of all, the only thing nice would be if the trial were held in, the U.S. Midwest in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Because it would have come to a much quicker conclusion. All you need is a rope and a tree, and you're done.
Yep.
And, I would hope it would be awesome if somebody could spirit that little girl away and bring her to the West. And allow her to spend a few years trying to therapeutically recover physically and psychologically, And society's so twisted. I mean, it is almost like a little sparkle of hope, though, that a judge managed to get some semblance of sanity in the midst of all this. It's almost just a very brief spark of hope. God knows how quickly it'll,
it will. But, yeah, the girl will be killed, and the judge will be killed, and the imam will be released from prison. But it is amazing how this imam lied and said, this girl's really 17 years old. She seduced me. She wanted it. And this is consensual sex. She was just one of my wives. And, that temporary marriage they have in Islam. It's how Islam corrupted this man's mind to the point where he had absolutely no conscience. He was nothing but a savage because of the religion of Islam. And the little girl is actually speaking out against him, said, "You shamed me, you're a liar, you destroyed my life, you almost killed me." The judge says, a 10-year-old cannot seduce and does not seduce an old man. She's a child. The fact is, this is an act of pedophilia. Now, it's interesting that in Afghanistan, there have been some men, it's called the Pagman rapists, who were sentenced to death. But they weren't sentenced to death. And what they did is they came upon a group of women that were walking back from a market, and they tied them down and systematically gang raped them and ended up killing them in the process. They were not executed for rape because there was the judge had no authority to execute them for rape. They were not executed for murder because you don't die. You can't be convicted for murder if you kill a woman, if you're a man. They were actually executed for robbery because they robbed the women in addition to raping them and killing them. And so in Afghanistan, robbery can be a capital offense, and that's what they were convicted of. But that's the only other place where rapists have been hung. But
perverse and strange.
Imagine the father, though. Your daughter was savaged in this way, and you don't console her. You don't speak on her behalf. You don't hug her. You don't protect her. You abandon her.
Sociopathic hard artists. I mean, that is sociopathic absence of empathy.
Yeah, it's just like the American, though, in New Orleans, the Muslim whose son was killed while trying to throw Molotov cocktails at people driving by in cars, which would have, if he had succeeded, he would have burned a family alive inside of their car. And he's, talking about how the Israelis are corrupt for having prevented their son from burning people alive. And just say, okay, I don't feel any sympathy for you. None.
Right. At very least, you have to say, it's one thing to be dissident or to protest or something, but when you take up arms like that, you've taken up lethal arms, at very least you have to be viewed as a soldier, in which case you're eligible to be shot.
You know, and when you take up arms as in a guerrilla battle where you are, for example, like the Catholic IRA in Northern Ireland, and you're taking up arms against the police, against the military, against the judicial and political system that's oppressing you, you're now a soldier, you should be regarded as a soldier. I won't support what you're doing, but you chose a violent means of protest, and therefore, if you are killed while trying to kill, so be it. You know, that's the choice that you made. But if you are throwing a Molotov cocktail at a car, trying to throw it inside of an open window to burn the inhabitants who are civilians alive, then you don't get any dignity. Then there is nothing redeeming about you. There is no excuse, no justification. You are a depraved savage. And your death is actually a net gain by society. Society gained by the death of this boy. It did not lose.
Right. You had mentioned the 72 versions on the sexual indoctrination and stuff. I always like to reiterate that the 72 versions, most religions, just as the words gospel, Godspell, or church, are mockeries in Christianity.
Right.
The 72 virgins are a mockery of the uninitiated. They represent there's an astrological theme there. They represent the 5-degree dodecans of an astrological calendar.
Yes.
And so they're being mocked, you know, because you have the exoteric and the esoteric. So the exoteric is the sexual virgin side, you know, physical gratification. The esoteric side that the mockers are using is the astrological aspect. So it's a mockery, and they don't even know it.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, too, is that, Muhammad mocked all of his followers. He played them for fools because they were fools. The 72 virgins is not part of the Quran or Hadith.
No.
All the Quran says is numerous virgins and the perpetual virgins, and the Hadith says that if you kill a Jew, that you get bonus virgins, but the number is a much later development. By the way, in the case in Afghanistan with the 10-year-old girl who was torn to pieces by her Islamic rapist, the mother also disowned the child. Never looked at her, never spoke to her, never touched her. Islam is a horrible disease. It destroys everything it touches. By the way, as we were talking about the 72 virgins, the multiple virgins and the fact that they grow, according to the Quran, a new growth so they can stay perpetual virgins. It's all to make certain that that sex is about conquest. It's about inflicting pain on the victim. There is no love in Islam. Islam is a religion that is completely impervious to the concept of love. And this notion that if you go off as a jihadist and die killing non-Muslims, that you're going to be rewarded with a perpetual stream of never-ending virgins is so ludicrous, so immoral, so repulsive, so stupid. I have no qualms whatsoever exposing and condemning Islam as a moronic religion that only fools fools. You have to be a fool. And, of course, there is no depiction of perpetual male virgins for women. There are male virgins in the Quran, but therefore male jihadists, bisexual or homosexual male jihadists have access to male virgins, according to the Quran. In Cairo, Egypt's dictator, he likes the term president, but there was no election. I mean, come on. You know, there's an election where where the party that won 75% of the seats in the only free election in Egypt's history is not only declared illegal, but all of the leaders are imprisoned, sentenced to death. Their party is declared illegal. All of their funds and all of their files are confiscated. And so you can only run against the general if he approves you. Only one person was approved to run against him, and even that person withdrew at the end. There was no election. He's not a president. He's a dictator. But anyway, Egypt's dictator, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, said on Saturday that an assault on the army checkpoint in the Sinai Peninsula that killed 30 troops was a foreign-funded operation, and he vowed to take drastic action against the Islamic militants. Now, he's a fundamentalist Muslim. When he was in war college in the United States, all of his papers were written trying to justify Islamic jihad. He's a fundamentalist Muslim. He's a jihadist Muslim. But like all fundamentalist Muslims, it's all about him. And so anybody that, even if they are also a fundamentalist Muslim, but want a different group of people empowered, he's going to oppose them. Now, what's interesting is that he's presenting this as foreign funded. So who would be the foreign nation that is funding the jihadist in the Sinai? And the Sinai has become a war zone. The principal economic product right now in the Sinai is human body parts. The Muslims are funding their jihad by taking body parts out of living victims. They're armed to the teeth, most of the arms having flowed in via Libya when Qatar and the United States armed the jihadists to oppose the Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi. It is a war zone, completely out of control. And so these fundamentalist Muslims who are upset with Sisi for declaring both the Salaf and the Muslim Brotherhood parties illegal and for imprisoning their heroes, their religious leaders, has been committing acts of guerrilla warfare against the army, against Sisi's support mechanism in the Sinai. And so Sisi is saying, no, this is an act of terrorism. It's not an act of terrorism. It's a guerrilla act because it's against military troops. But beyond that, who is it, do you think, that is funding this aggression? Now, it's not Iran. It's not Shia Islam, even though Egypt is Sunni. It's certainly not the United States. Not Israel. Who do you think it is? It's Qatar. But can little old Qatar overthrow Egypt? According to Sisi, the answer is yes. Old Sisi said there is a big conspiracy against us while he was standing with his army commanders at the funeral of the troops. And he says this is a challenge to save Egypt, that this huge plot being waged against Egypt by external forces threatens the very existence of the state. I mean, come on. I mean, come on. What a complete myth. Yeah, the military of Egypt is funded by the United States almost in its entirety. And we give them all manner of weapons. The Qataris spend probably $1 billion a year supporting various Islamic fundamentalist terrorist groups and arming them. And their arming of the militants in the Sinai would be at arm's length. It's probably they armed Libya and Libyan jihadists, and the Libyan jihadists sold the weapons to the Egyptian jihadists. Now, the Qataris are bad. I mean, he is the principal gunrunner for fundamentalist Islam. Yeah, of course, he's Obama's great buddy. But they're merchants of death. They are providing most of the weapons in the Syrian civil war. They're providing most of the weapons in Libya and that civil war. They are the principal gunrunners of fundamentalist jihadist Islam, at least on the Sunni side, which represents about 80% of Muslims. But this notion that that Qatari money is a conspiracy against or a serious threat to Egypt is just utter nonsense. I mean, it's, wow, I guess if you become a Muslim, you lose your ability to think and you see boogeymen at every possible, behind every possible rock and tree. But this is not the case.
But you know, Yada.
Yes.
You know, as such, given that the Qataris cast themselves in that role, mm-hmm. it's not paranoid necessarily to suspect them. But you know, in view of all this like internecine rivalry, you know, it's no wonder that people in the West are confused about which groups are which, whether it's Al Nusra, Al Qaeda, is you know, Islamic State, Muslim Brotherhood. And I routinely hear talk radio people, guests and hosts alike, you know, equating one group with another when they are not equivalent. But it illustrates how inherently divisive Islam is, that there are so many internecine rivalries. And I wanted to mention something about the role of Israel in all this. You know, I'm looking at all this stuff going on, and Israel's got its teeth sunken into the Iranian thing so much. It seems to me that the ongoing stability of the Shiite governments of Iran and Syria, at least at this time, is in the interest of Israel.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, because if Iran gets overthrown and this whole caliphate, you know, if Iran, Jordan, and Syria get overthrown, it's over. Islam goes Sunni and Israel has worn its place in the kingdom.
Yeah, it's over anyway. We're told that explicitly for Israel in the sense of they're going to lose the ability to defend themselves. I don't think there's any chance that that Iran gets overthrown because I don't think that Sunni Muslims have the wherewithal to overthrow them unless the Sunni Muslims were to unify and the Qataris with their massive military and the Saudi Arabians and the Kuwaitis and the Turks collectively were to decide to use American weapons against Iran, and that they were to all declare war against Iran, then there is a possibility that the Iranians could be overthrown. But Islam is so divisive amongst particularly the Sunnis that I don't see the collective unification of those Sunni countries. For example, Saudi Arabia and Turkey have been enemies of one another ever since World War I, where the Saud warlords, in conjunction with Wahhab, declared war on the Turks. So they're not going to join forces. It is also true that, and your point is well made, that there is this tendency to try to equate rival groups together. But it's interesting that Al-Qaeda does not exist anymore. Al-Nusra doesn't even exist anymore. And for the most part, the Muslim Brotherhood doesn't exist anymore. So all of these Islamic organizations have had to manifest themselves under different names. But new
factions to arise. So it's actually to the whole world's advantage that Islam is so busy tearing itself up with internecine rivalry. If they ever stop, we're in trouble.
Yeah, this proxy war between Sunni and Shia Islam in Syria is actually in the world's best interest. The civil war in Iraq between Sunni and Shia Muslims is in the world's best interest. The heightened war now between the Kurds and the Turks, both Muslim groups, and Turkey is in the world's interest. But we ought not be arming them. We ought to allow them to go ahead and neuter each other, to fight each other, to diminish one another's overall capacity to infect the rest of the world. But we should just isolate them. You know, let them kill one another.
the Kurds are functioning as a buffer for Iran, you know, in a sense, you know.
The whole Kurd thing is just so whacked out because, you know, the Kurds militia is called Embrace Death. They are unbelievably dishonest. They're constantly putting out rhetoric that is designed to get them more American weapons, lying about whatever the basis is for the need for those weapons, and then surrendering those weapons to the Islamic State because they really aren't nearly as formidable as they pretend to be. And all along, they are undermining Turkey, which is a NATO participant. You really got a mess there. And, of course, the United States doesn't want the Kurds to have their own independent state carved out of Iraq. And yet, with all of these weapons, that's precisely the end game of the Kurds. The bottom line here is that Islam is corrosive. It is divisive. And so the only thing that keeps Islam from destroying Israel and from infecting the rest of the world is their own internal rage and stupidity against one another. It's always been the case. It's very much like what happened with Roman Catholicism and the Eastern Orthodox Church of them having a religion that was identical except who was in charge. And,
oh, no, we have to make up doctrinal distinctions that are moot, you know. Question.
And, of course, the doctrinal distinctions are irrelevant. It's just like the doctrinal distinctions between Shia and Sunni Islam are absolutely irrelevant. It's just who's in charge. The fact of the matter is, I do not think that Iran will fail, even though they're outgunned. Over 20-1 and outmanned 4-1. I do think Jordan is going to fall. I think you're going to see Jordan taken over because the United States, anytime the United States engages in the Muslim world, it is counterproductive. So rather than hindering the Islamic State, the American involvement is going to aid and abet the Islamic State. Rather than aiding and abetting Assad, is going to work actually against Assad in the long run. And what I see with the America's involvement against the Islamic State is the Islamic State becoming more powerful as a direct result.
Control their little Frankenstein monster, and it'll turn on them.
Absolutely. And what'll end up happening is that. I think they will continue to terrorize Baghdad. There's two large suicide attacks in Baghdad just in the last 24 hours. The whole world is focusing on Kobani, which the Islamic State could care less about. It's meaningless to them. But you've got all the focus there while they're softening up Baghdad. I do think they will attack Baghdad. I don't think it's their goal to control Baghdad. I don't think they have enough manpower to control Baghdad. I think it would cost too many losses, but they can certainly.
If they threaten the Green Zone control center, then that'll be the justification for boots on the ground.
I think that they want America to commit boots on the ground because it will again play right into their hands. So they want Americans to have to do that and an attack on the Green Zone.
Green Zone complex. They're not going to lose that conflict. That'll be the line in the sand. They can't lose that conflict.
And I do think that ISIS can threaten that. I think that ISIS can threaten control of the airport, can threaten control of the Green Zone, albeit temporarily, enough to get Americans to react stupidly and to recommit troops, and that's what the Islamic State wants. I do think that given time, the Islamic State will overrun Jordan. I don't think there's anything Jordan can do to stop them. I don't see them overrunning Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia's American military is just way too stout for them. But I think that the Islamic State is as miserable as they can be doing what they're doing. You know, their capital in Raqqa in Syria made news this weekend because there's video there of scores of men whose heads they have cut off. They lay the bodies on the sidewalk, and then there's a wrought iron fence around a park or a political institution there, and they've taken the heads and they have put them on the spikes of the wrought iron fence, and it just goes on for as far as the eye can see, and you see all of these women in their black burqas walking around, and men going by and photographing it, and then the Islamic State conducting their speeches where they're just enraged.
Positively macabre.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you like to be the park janitor who has to eventually clean the heads up?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that Islam is a death cult. It is a really disgusting, demonic death cult. And somewhere, hopefully at some time, a majority of people are going to realize that Islam is deadly. It is destructive. It is deceitful. It is demonic. It is incompatible with anything decent. And the Islamic State is the most fundamentalist Islamic group on the planet currently today. And this is their behavior. They celebrate, not only celebrate death, but disgusting, savage death. Interesting story out of the European Union. Britain is part of the European Union. They're not part of the Euro. And so the European Union technocrats... surprised that David Cameron, who is a genuine scumbag, the prime minister, with a 2.1 billion euro bill Friday. So on Friday, they sent him a bill, and it says, you owe us 2.1 billion. David Cameron called the EU a thirsty vampire for seeking an additional immediate sum worth a seventh of London's annual payment. And it was all because a statistical review of national income suggested that the British could pay more to the thirsty vampire known as the EU. So Cameron said this was completely unacceptable. Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany, which, like France, is to get a refund in the exact same exercise. So here's France and Germany going to get a refund, and Britain being taxed, said that she understood that it was a hefty demand, but that Cameron didn't say he wasn't going to pay. He just said that he had concerns over the short deadline. Talk about denial. Showing his anger in front of television cameras, the buffoon known as Cameron said, it's an appalling way to behave. It's interesting, too, that the EU officials on their taxation scheme based upon relative prosperity decided that they would tax Italy, the Netherlands, and even Greece more than they had previously. That ought to do wonders to the weakest and second weakest economy in the EU. Also on rape news, this news from Iran, since we considered rape news from Iraq. In Iran, they went ahead with an execution of a woman. Her name was Rehaneh Jabari. She was 26 years old. She was hanged to death in a Tehran prison on Saturday morning. She had been convicted in a, when you use convicted, that almost speaks of a trial. Now, this is Islamic jurisprudence, so there really is no conviction. But she was accused of killing a man who was trying to rape her. So here's a woman trying to defend herself from being raped by an Islamic imam, and she killed him. And so for the crime of preventing the rape, for the crime of protecting herself, she was hung. Welcome to the world of Islam. There is a story that we will get into at length in tomorrow's program. I'll probably devote the majority of the 2 hours of the program to a speech that has been quoted, typically out of context, over the weekend in major news outlets, and that is Vladimir Putin lashing out at the United States, and he did. He gave a speech in Sochi, and it was to the Valdai International Discussions Club's 11th session. There were 108 experts, historians, and political analysts from 25 countries, including 62 foreign participants, that were in attendance. And Vladimir Putin, who was probably still there from the, may well have been there from the Formula One race that was such a big success through the Winter Olympic Village at Sochi, Russia, decided that now is the time for him to properly disclose his view of Americans' behavior in the world today. And so as we move into the second hour, or the first hour, tomorrow's program, you want to listen to what he had to say. There, almost everything that he said, I thought, was actually understated. But that he correctly labeled the United States as the principal belligerent in the world today. His presentation of America is really quite similar to Yahweh's presentation of America in Isaiah 18, which is a God's expose on America as the nation exists today. So, if you're interested in international politics, it'll be an interesting discussion.